Southern Bramble would especially like to thank our sponsor tier for sponsoring this episode, Josie the Mountain Troll, Pamela, and C. Shaw. Thank you all so much.
You're listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of crooked ways. I'm Marshall, Witch of Southern Light.
And I'm Jelly Donut with cream.
And I said, Jimmy, baby, jelly donuts don't have cream. And then I laughed, and then he laughed, and the guy laughed, and then he hit me. He just hit me, the bastard. Austin, Bane X Bramble on Instagram.
Do I go? Sure. Okay.
Today we have a very special guest with us. Please welcome David Davis of Porous Palms on Instagram. And if I were a more responsible person, I would have had your bio up like I planned to. And yes, I'm definitely not stalling, but here it goes. David Davis at Porous Palms is a cartomancer, folk mystic, sorcerer, educator, writer, and artist currently based in Michigan. His creative and spiritual cosmology is deeply informed by a distinctly Black and queer mysticism devoted to the sensual, the vile, and the venomous. Hot. As an eclectic occultist whose practice spans a wide range of traditions from medieval and early modern planetary magic to African-American hoodoo, his work is founded on the principles of respectful cultural exchange, animism, and ancestral veneration. At its core, Porous Palms is a celebratory exploration of identity and place and the ways they inform our most essential experiences as human beings. This mixture of influences manifests as a diverse and ever-evolving expression of divinity, language, and ritual, resting at the borders of personal and communal realities. David, welcome. Did you like how I had your bio pulled up?
That is so obnoxious of me. I've never heard that read back at me.
No, I get that because I know what my bio says because Here's a secret. We're all talking in third person and we're writing about ourselves in third person, which is cringe to begin with. And so If somebody says it aloud, it's like, oh my God, did I write that? Did I say that about myself? David, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I am great. How are you?
I'm good. Fabulous. I'm even better after all that.
Fabulous. I'm so glad.
I sound like I have energy and I really don't.
We're just going to ride this wave of delirium together. Mm-hmm. And see what comes of
that.
It.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like when you're more tired, I sometimes get more like delirious if I'm just tipsy or like really tired. And like you just get to that same zone either way. Everything's funny. Things that aren't funny are funny and you're laughing and mostly you just want to go to sleep or kill someone. But either way, I get it.
Yeah.
Marshall, you were really silent there. Were you just like taken aback by all of that?
Oh, no, I was really enjoying it. I felt like you were putting on a show just for us.
Just for you. Yeah, just you and all of our closest friends. So, David, would you mind, for those who don't know you, do you want to open up your chest cavity wide, show us your heart, give us your deepest and darkest, tell us your childhood trauma, how you got here, how did you get here? Why are you here?
Opening my chest cavity. This is my I am she moment. So, I'm David. I guess the beginning of my magical journey started in church. Funny enough, I grew up in a very spirit-led, sort of spirit-active space. Spirits weren't metaphors or abstractions for things. Like, they were very real, and they were always around you, and they could interact with you. You could interact with them, etc. And so, like, growing up with this awareness of the supernatural, right, of the other side, quote unquote, and then you pair that with my somewhat rebellious nature, and then you pair that with my, you know, lifelong love of like mythology and folklore, and also my power fetish, and it's, you end up with me, and sort of that's the quick trajectory, like a condensed trajectory of like how I ended up where I am right now magically. That's it so far, I think.
It's always the church girls. Just a fucked up girl on the tightrope of delusion.
A pastor's kid too, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I'm curious actually. I actually wrote this a little bit later, but I feel like since this is the beginning and we're just starting, I'm curious. I feel like I've heard you say this before, but I'd love our listeners to hear it. You chose the name Porous Palms for your handle as your screen name. I think a lot of times we choose our screen names as like little tiny, just like indicators of our online identity. I would love for you to tell our listeners, like, where did Porous Palms come from? Why did you choose it?
Yeah, so I made the account. I can't recall if I started from scratch or if I just renamed my sort of pre-existing art account. But either way, before this, there was an art account, like art and poetry, and I was operating under a pen name since like 2017 into 2020. And then the quarantine happened, and like a lot of people, I was, you know, identity crisis. Like, what's going on? Who do I want to be in the world? And I decided, like, I want to be myself. I don't want to work under a pen name anymore. I want to kind of flip the sort of situation. Like, because before it was the emphasis was the art and the poetry, which it was influenced by my magic and my sort of spiritual practice. But that was. The spiritual stuff was sort of on the back burner, if that makes any sense. And I wanted to flip it and sort of put the focus on the magic and the spirituality, and maybe every once in a while post a picture of something that I drew or a poem that I wrote. And so Porous Palms is sort of like an alliterative way to sort of point out my sort of hands-on approach to learning and sort of magical operation. I like doing as much with my hands as I possibly can. Obviously, there are, you know, I'm not over here like crushing dragon's blood with my bare hands, but like if I can, like get my palms in there and sort of stain them and cut them a little, burn them a little, you know, sort of immerse them in what I'm doing, then that's like the best way that I engage with spirits and the way that I learn from them. And so, like, porous, as in like absorbance, absorbing information, absorbing qualities, and then palms. Referring to my perpetually clammy hands.
I was very inspired. I kept reading it over and over again, thinking about it, and I feel like it evokes such imagery. I feel like now, I personally, as I identify as a witch, as a witch and practitioner of the craft, I think of my hands a lot as a huge part of my tools, of my craft, the things that I do. And I feel like all of us have this imagery. Of course, it's pervasive throughout media, movies, TV nowadays, like that image of the witch with like the black fingertips or like stained hands, like they've been working in something that is slightly other. And not that I had this image of like sooty fingertips, but like I've been writing lately and like this character that I've been writing about has works with red things a lot, matter root, dragon's blood, and her hands are always stained red. And I'm thinking about this imagery of that our work really shows up in our hands because they're our number one tool. And it just makes me think a lot about the fact that we as practitioners of the occult, we have to be cunning, we have to be observant. And I don't just mean like we see things around us. We are very observant. We're very absorbent. We take in a lot of things we see and think about them in multiple layers, like an onion. It's not just what's before us. Sometimes it's the messages that we're interpreting that are before us. Sometimes it's the way that we experience gnosis and UPG and aspects of how we absorb that from landscape to landscape. So I was very inspired by that, and I was really wanting our listeners to hear from you where that came from. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
I think it makes me you're right, Marshall. It definitely gives like a lot of imagery. I always think of like these very like every time I read your name out, especially when I first saw you online and started following you, it made me think of like these hands with like hypericium perforatum, like little tiny holes in it, which is nasty trypophobia imagery. But it also makes me think of like the way that like when you're talking about doing things with your hands, I know we share a love of craft and like artistry. It makes me think of also like the absorbency of the feet and like how the hands and the palms of the feet share a lot of similarities within like the skin that they have on them. Like the skin on your hands and the skin on your feet are very similar. And the way that like medicines in medicines and magic and also venoms and toxic things can be absorbed through the feet, especially in so many different traditions, including hoodoo. But it also makes me think of like dire women on indigo plantations and people who, especially like in the Dominican Republic and Florida, all of these places, like how their hands are always stained blue. There was a woman, I don't know who she was. She's an actor of some sort who was at the Met Gala this past year. And she wore this outfit, and she had stained her hands blue with indigo. And she was like walking down the red carpet because the theme was obviously America, something to do with America. And it was obviously like a nod to these slaves and also these plantation workers who worked the indigo dye plantations, and their hands would be stained with like this blue substance. So yeah, just tangent that we didn't need to have, but yeah, that's what it makes me think of.
But it's interesting. I think a lot about whenever I do work and whenever I'm working with my hands in the craft, I oil my hands a lot. Like I have a very specific intention oil, and I used to use more of a grease, and I've now created my own oil. And I feel like it's this oil that I just use a few drops, and it gets all over my hands. It absorbs in them. It carries with it a slightly spicy a spicy scent, and there's something about that that triggers this sense that I am preparing to do work. And I guess I never really thought about how pervasive our palms are when it comes to the work we do until I really thought about that name. So that's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the other day I was doing something with cinnamon. I was tearing it by hand, the softer variety. I forget the name of it, but it was tearing well, but it was, it's sort of breaking skin. Right, like if I was able to look at it under light and see that like the few layers of the epidermis were kind of being torn away, and it was red and inflamed, and I was like, a blood sacrifice almost, right? Like the spirits were like, you're going to work with me, I'm going to sort of cut through your hands, and like that's how I'm going to sort of engage with you. It's like I was being stung, and there was like an exchange of essence going on that was sort of empowering that work. So yeah, I love my hands.
I love when our things make us bleed, kind of. And they do. Sometimes they'll grab blood just right out of you. That drop you gave me wasn't enough. Give me more. So we need to address something because this is a tangent I've been on. Marshall's been on. I'm sure you've been on. No, I know you've been on. But you don't identify as a witch, and you in your bio clearly state that you like you're an occultist, and that's kind of where you separate yourself, an eclectic occultist, which we're here to re I'm here, Austin Fuller, presidency 2026 or whatever year that the next presidency is, 2028. I'm here to declare that we're reclaiming eclectic for the cool girls, eclectic magic. Can you tell us why you don't identify as a witch and why you choose other words to describe yourself?
I think the word witch, I know the word, and by the way, I'm generally for the listeners, I'm generally not a huge fan of like over prefacing or punctuating myself with like, in my opinion, to me, blah, blah, blah. So if I'm saying it unless stated otherwise, it's my opinion. So I'm not going to just repeat that over and over again. So witch is a loaded term. It's also very, and that, ooh, I'm gonna say that load, that weight. That weight varies from culture to culture, from group to group. And I consider myself, even though a lot of the magic that I do isn't traditional hoodoo, I consider myself to be culturally hoodoo, right? Like hoodoo is sort of informs a lot of not my cosmology directly, but kind of just how I navigate the world, the music I listen to, the food I eat, etc. And within the hoodoo context, witch is a bad word, right? As it is in most places, right? Or most sort of contexts. And so, magically speaking, I don't refer to what I do as witchcraft because I don't see it as witchcraft. I don't work with witching spirits. And I don't work with witching spirits. However, and I hope I'm not sounding too jumbled, there I do, however, identify sort of with the witch on an archetypal level, as I've like discussed like before, like as a figure, right? As a figurehead, and not necessarily a culturally specific entity. And that sort of archetype that I resonate with is that sort of not quite human, sort of morally ambiguous, rebellious, creature, right? The sensual, the vile, and the venomous, right? Like that's what my sort of cosmology is sort of wrapped up in, and that's what it's informed by. And everything I do, for the most part, is in service of that in some way, shape, or form. So I don't identify as a witch for cultural reasons. It just doesn't feel right. Sorcerer, I can't remember the name of the book. I think it's the Sorcerer's Handbook, Jason Miller. They talk about in the beginning, like the sorcerer being at the intersection of the magician and the witch. Like they're this sort of like in they're this middle person. They sort of are not quite one or the other. And when I read that, I was like, I'm gonna experiment with that for a little while. I think labels and names are important, but I also think it's equally important for us to play with them. And so who knows what I'm gonna be calling myself in a month from now, but for now, sorcerer fits. It feels good for the kind of work that I do and the way that I want to be seen. But then yeah, there is that sort of symbolic connection to the witch and witchcraft, of course.
It makes me think of like when, especially for some friends that I have in other traditions that I won't speak too much about, but it reminds me of how in certain cultural aspects, like there of course is like magic, and there's the magic that you do, but then there's also like, oh, this person has done witchcraft on me. Like witchcraft more is like an act as opposed to a thing or a person. Like this person has done some sort of Malefica on me to and the witch to me and many people I know who operate in similar currents as I do, like the witch is something that when you're inviting the other into you, and that gets a lot different than say sorcery or occultism when there's still so well sometimes it gets tricky, but for the most part when you're there's still that the operations or the people that you serve, the thing, the currents that you work in. Certainly there's Malefica, like there's such a benefic quality to your work that I really want to talk about and get into, but with like witchcraft is just something else, and yeah, witchcraft is just something of its own thing.
And it's not, like I said, language is important. I'm very passionate about proper language being used with the understanding that language is fluid, right? Like language is not meant to be rigid. So like, yes, things can are in flux. Their definitions are always changing and overlapping and expanding and constricting and including, right? And so language is very fluid, but just the tendency for anything that is magic, like vaguely magical, to be sort of labeled as witchcraft, it's kind of, per my sort of understanding of the witch as this socio-political figure, I can't wrap my mind around the idea of like, I carry a crystal, therefore I am a witch. And it's like, it's more than that, darling. Like you, it's more than that. It's like you said, that giving up of a part of yourself, a part of your humanity in service of something that doesn't really care about humanity, right? Like we joke about like, oh, we're both up at 4 a.m. because we have things to do. And it's like the spirits don't care that you have work in 3 hours or whatever. It's like they don't see you as a they don't see you as human. They see you as kin. And so they approach you as such. And sometimes that leads to all kinds of complications when you're trying to lead a a quote unquote mundane life alongside of that. But you know, it's worth it, I guess.
I love that you brought up this archetypal figure of the malefic witch living off, like, not necessarily off in the woods, but like there is this almost more of an archetype, a figure. And it's interesting because I feel like I've heard this said before and multiple times where, like, I think it was even like work done over in Appalachia or Ozarks where people would do sort of like anti-witching work for people, but it was kind of understood that no, this wasn't necessarily someone that you know directly in your village. This was like a creature type being mm-hmm. that preys upon. And it's almost more of like a greater spirit / idea. And I feel like depending on where you're coming from, depending on what your background is, depending on what informs the way your cosmology works, the way you see the world, which carries with it from one person to another an extremely different connotation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's violent, sometimes it's virulent, sometimes it's someone who's carrying a crystal who thinks that that's what they're calling themselves. And literally I have seen someone be like, oh, this morning I manifested no traffic, I'm a witch. And I'm just kind of like, you know what, far be it from me to tell you how to identify, but I know how I mm-hmm. identify a witch. I know how I think of what it means to be. And I actually love having these conversations on the podcast and listening to other people talk about it, because a lot of us will have different variants about how we interpret this type of identity and then how we end up enacting it in our craft. So I completely see where that comes from. And there is that transgressive nature. Sometimes I know this is kind of silly, but sometimes I think of, and have you even considered creating, not considered, I have created work. You ever see the show Salem?
Yes.
There is that moment where they're like sending their hag out to do their work. And then you get glimpses of them in the mirror. And they are these absolutely decrepit, decaying, wet, gross versions, the most base and malefic version of one's inner self that we're sending off. And sometimes I get that vision of the malefic dark witch that's actually just part of the very, very angry and vengeful shadow self. So I can understand not everyone wanting to really deep dive into that.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. And I resonate with that image a lot as well. The hag as it's represented mm-hmm. in Salem, that idea of like, sort of beyond or behind this facade, there is something else that is you, but it's also not entirely you, but you can't really put your finger on what it is exactly. It's just mm-hmm. kind of, like you say, like the most base version of yourself. And so, yeah, that's, I love that show.
Oh, me too. I love it.
Yeah, the witch body is like the Victorian gray painting, like on the outside. The beautiful mm-hmm. creature whose skin has become better, hair has become fuller and longer, and you know, you just get so gorgeous. And then behind the curtain, this like rotting, nasty, violent, feral thing. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. At its worst, I think why I fear the implications of calling people witch is because then we start to do this thing in America, and it's really like a very like Western American contemporary secular Protestant thing where like then anything starts to become labeled as witchcraft, and it's just like the cultural implications of that, like as you said in Hoodoo, and as we've talked in another episode with Juju, and as me and them have talked about multiple times, this idea that anything getting labeled as witchcraft when it's not, especially when people would be very like, that's absolutely not witchcraft. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? I'm not a witch. And I think that's where things get really damaging and really harmful. And so that's why I always love having this conversation, because I think it helps remind and hopefully assert the idea that like these things are not synonymous, and oftentimes they can be in opposition with each other, and where that in between stands is good conversation.
Yeah, I think so.
A friend of mine actually sent me this because she thought I'd get a kick out of it. She is part of a mom group, and someone posted in this Facebook mom group, I need some Christian input and someone to tell me tell me if I'm thinking way too much about this, you know where we're going. Opinions on simmer pots. From what I know, they're based on the pagan religion and many use them as witchcraft. I'm trying to live a lower toxic life and cutting out what I can. I love this idea of a simmer pot, but I don't want to mistakenly use it, be using witchcraft and opening my home up to something unknowingly. Am I crazy or overthinking? And
No, Sarah Beth, you aren't.
nope.
the responses in here are some of them are kind, some of them are so intense. One of them that was really, really blunt was, this is why we can't take you seriously. Unless you're intentionally doing witchcraft, you're not doing witchcraft, period. And I think that's honestly like the ultimate, most baseline thing. If you're calling yourself a witch and you're intentionally doing what you define as witchcraft, like that's a little bit more general, but still it kind of comes down to like, I can't imagine someone question, am I doing witchcraft?
Right.
Did you mean to do witchcraft? No. Did you want to put some lavender in some boiling water and go, gee, that smells good? You're not doing witchcraft.
Exactly.
That's so funny. I love that.
I love Facebook groups.
I can't, they send my blood pressure through the roof. I can't do
Oh,
them.
I say that very sarcastically, just so we're clear. Hashtag backslash
I was
ass.
in some when I first got online, and I was like, after 3 months, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Not at all.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. They stress me out. It's the full spectrum of bullshit. You'll find in a single Facebook group. It's not a fun place.
And a single Facebook post, honestly.
Yeah.
I was wondering, so as we've kind of established, you're not a witch. Sorcerer, I think, is a really great word. I love the term, by the way, sorcerer. I also was saying the word wizard a lot today. And I was like, I just love like the dictation, the syntax of the word wizard.
Yeah,
Wizard.
it's a very active word.
Yeah, absolutely. Wizard. Could you tell us exactly what your magical practice looks like, as you know, especially going back to that delicious bio, where all of those things are? Like, what does that look like for you? Could you tell us and our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So, like, if we're going to go back to those three pillars of my cosmology, the sensual, the vile, and the venomous, starting with the first, the sensual, I value immensely the capacity for my body to experience things. That is a huge, huge, huge part of my regular magical practice, the senses, how, to what extent. To what depth can I immerse myself in a sensory experience within the context of ritual, feeling things, tasting them, smelling them? I always forget all of them, all of the senses whenever the time comes, but the five. And so, yeah, like that's a big part of my practice. It's very, at the risk of sounding cringy and kind of trendy, it's very embodied. It's very, I spend a lot of time like in. And on my body, rubbing things on myself, caressing my skin. It's very Suspiria. It's very heavy sighs and oh my goodness, like I'm just feeling every part of myself. And that's oftentimes like what a conjuration would look like. So the physical is very much rooted in the physical. The vile, engaging with materials, currents, ideas that may be a bit taboo, depending on who you ask. And so I've been on a sort of like a necromancy 101 kick lately. So like deal working within that like that death current, venomous creatures, like my work with the scorpion spirit, those things that repel and are sort of seen as like, I don't want that in my space because it's dangerous. Yeah, and then the venomous, it was kind of redundant with the second one as well. But yeah, it's like a lot of material work, working with items and things, working with my body. Of course, well, probably not of course, but if anyone who is familiar with my work, a lot of that is sort of framed through a planetary lens. So almost everything I do, I sort of try to frame it through one of those seven currents. Yeah, that's generally what it looks like on a regular basis. A lot of chores, a lot of tending to physical space, tending to the body, food, drink, movements, all of that. Yeah.
I like when you said Suspiria. I didn't notice this before, but that Thom Yorke Volk album, the Suspiria soundtrack, is right behind your head.
Yes.
And you had said it, and you just shifted so slightly, and I caught it, and I was like, she's trying to jump out. Mother Suspiriorum!
I love that you started with sensual, and it's funny because the first thing I thought of was like sensual as in like, you know, sexy, something that was related to that. But when you start talking about the senses themselves, it really, really felt like, I felt like there was something that I connected with deeply there, because there is this aspect of all of our senses, the way that we smell herbs, the way that we can taste them. Because as an animist myself, and I know you're an animist as well, there is an aspect of connecting with the spirit of a plant, the spirit of a liquid, the spirit of the crap, the tools that we're working with, when we can smell them, when we can taste them. If we're metal, you can smell the metal smithing. You can feel the cold metal in your hands. Mm-hmm. If it's sharp, not that I'm telling you to poke yourself, but you can feel its sharpness. It's got a very physical representation of the spirit that exists within. You know, certain plants will have things that smell sharp, and they're kind of like, oh my goodness, like I can feel the type of energy it's giving off, whether that's spicy or whether that's soothing. I really, really love that you pointed that out. And not to go back to Salem again, but I'll bring it up just because it's a great additive here. There's something they say in there, and while it's a little bit generalized, they say magic always starts with arousal. And I really, really like this concept. And arousal doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, like sexual arousal, but arousal as in like bodily sense. Yeah. Senses. I am waking up my senses. I'm waking up my sight. I'm waking up my smell. I'm waking up the way that my hands feel on my body. And I use sometimes like those oils I was talking about in my hands, or like a witch's grease made of like datura or nightshades. And sometimes, you know, like I'll rub them, you know, on my neck, the back of my neck, the back of my ears, my armpits, my groin, the back of the pits of my knees, as I'm touching myself and rubbing them in. I'm waking up parts of my body. I'm really, really using my whole body as a tool. So that really, really spoke to me. And I feel like a lot of people get so lost in this idea of tools they need for their workspace, their altar. They got to go buy and go spend tons and tons of money. But it really, really starts with the body and your senses and waking them up to experience that in-betweenness.
Yeah. And this like very tactile, visceral approach to magic is something that I've always, you know, more or less have sort of aligned myself with, but it's something that really woke up in my practice when I started working with Mars a lot within the context of like my martial work, and viewing that those sort of martial spirits and that martial current as very much of the body, of the blood, of the stuff under the skin, right? Like there's the skin, but then there's like the guts and stuff underneath it. Like you said, like, you know, waking up your body, arousal, there definitely is a sexual element to a lot of my work, regardless of the sort of planetary or spiritual current I'm working in. I always try to find a way to make it a little illicit. But they're, you know, experimenting with this idea of like self-flagellation, right, as a way to sort of wake up my hands, right, taking a red dogwood branch and like banging the palm of my hand, and like it's red and it's tingling and it's hot and the blood is rushed to the surface, and I'm like, these hands are ready to do damage, right?
I used to do this thing where I would take that oil, I would rub it into my hands, and it would really heat them up to the point where I'm rubbing so much that when I stop, I can feel this continuous tingle.
Yeah.
And it feels like I'm really waking up, not just my typical hands that I'm going to write with, that I'm going to cook with, that I'm going to type on my phone with. These are my work hands.
Yeah.
These are my work hands.
My work hands.
No, yeah. So this idea of like sensory as the way that everything the way that everybody that we experience things, especially experiencing spirits. I was talking to this. I had recently gotten to see a friend, and we were discussing and talking about like how spirits are able to be perceived as a multi-sensory experience, and especially like in grimoires and things like that, how people are talking about seeing spirits, or like how emblemata will come through, especially during a conjuration. It's not necessarily like even back then, they weren't necessarily talking about it as like a physical apparition of something. There's this idea of visionary experience, the mind's eye. What does it mean to see, especially in like an early modern and medieval context? This idea that things come through, the airs are perfumed, like magic is extremely sensory, and sensual, also. So this idea of like having spirits come through as a scent or as a feeling. And also like an imagination kind of thing too, right? Like, where does your mind go during the middle of this conjuration? Is very important, especially like in the context of grimoires, because I think a lot of people expect like, what are these crazy insane occultists from like back in 1777 talking about, when they're talking about like, you'll see the image of a dragon coming out outside of the circle and things like that. They didn't always necessarily mean like, no, you're gonna actually see a dragon. Like, sometimes it's like you should see images of dragons, like in your eye, in your mind's eye, or hold the image of this thing in your eye, or specific colors and things like that,
Yeah.
feelings.
And then, like, going back into the body, going back to growing up in church, this idea of spirit possession, another form of sort of like ritual embodiment that you can sort of work your body up into enough of a frenzy where you have now opened yourself up to some outside influence that can now work through you, it can speak through you, it can heal through you, it can curse through you, it can do like the thing. I've seen all manner of sort of possession induced wonders, right? Deliverances, healings, etc. And so again, that's like a big part of like my practice as well. I mentioned dance, just anything that gets the heart rate up, that gets the blood boiling, and also kind of sort of hollows me out in a way.
Hollow me out, Holy Spirit. Did you grow up Pentecostal? Do you mind me asking?
Yes, in theory, it was like the church is owned by my grandmother, so pastor's kid as well as like pastor's grandson, grandchild. And so yes, she was from the Southern Baptist space, Kojic, like Church of God in Christ, like that was like how she grew up and how my dad grew up. The church that I grew up in, technically non-denominational, like the way they described it or the way they describe it. But yes, very Southern Baptist influenced, very Pentecostal, sort of there was a lot of that flair there, and it was all sort of taking place in this Gothic cathedral in Southwest Detroit. And so there was these like aesthetic clashes, these spatial clashes that I grew up with, and that have just, they've made me the good Christian woman I am today.
Amen. I also
Amen.
grew up, not, I didn't grow up Pentecostal, I grew up Lutheran, but at a point in time when I was a very little kid, our neighbor where we lived at the time grew up, and she would take us to her church, and she went to a Pentecostal church, and I couldn't have been older than four. And I would be the tambourine boy. Everyone called me tambourine boy because I would get up on the stage and shake the tambourine. And yeah, it was also a church where like the presence of God was expected through miracle, not like in an incredibly miraculous kind of way. They weren't so much big on healing at that church, like miracle healing, at least not what I remember. But like, the spirit moving through you, dancing through you, especially through song, the convulsion of the body. evangelical or not evangelical, but like Protestant church, Pentecostal church like that is very interesting, especially because it's so different than how we think of as Protestantized church. Yeah. But yeah, lots of magic to be had there.
Absolutely.
So you say in your bio you define yourself as an eclectic occultist. We've now tacked on sorcerer, which I love, being widely informed by early modern planetary magic and African American hoodoo. Can you tell us how those things inform each other, or are they like completely separate? I know some people try to divvy them up in some camps. I know some people put them together. How does that look for you?
So it's generally separate. My approach to planetary magic is less of a system and more of a lens, right? And so, like I mentioned earlier, like everything, I would argue every single thing can be sort of loosely categorized into one of the seven currents, right? And so, like even within the context of like my ancestor veneration work, like the main ancestor I work with is a Taurus, right? And so, like, even though when I'm working with them, it's not a planetary ritual per se, but it's very Venusian, right? Like in the offerings I leave, the incense I burn, and so it's like it's they're separate, but the planetary sort of element does kind of inform a lot of what I do. You know, I mentioned that like magically, I'm not hoodoo in the sense that like I don't. I'm not a reconstructionist, right, when it comes to this tradition of hoodoo, and that's a term that I relatively recently, there's an eyelash in my eye, I relatively recently came to, and I was grateful that I saw someone refer to themselves as a hoodoo reconstructionist because it finally gave me something to say that I am not, if that makes any sense, because I was really struggling with that, like what is my relationship to this tradition? And then when I saw, I believe it was Bless the Roads on Instagram, and they were like, I'm a reconstructionist, and I'm like, thank you for saying that, because now I know that I am not a reconstructionist. And so like that was a bit, that was an important revelation for me, in terms of just determining, like I said, my relationship to that. Yeah, but I don't s learn or perform a lot of like quote unquote traditional hoodoo workings. Traditional is a loaded term because it's very regional, etc. But that's not something I am necessarily interested in. I'm more so interested in sort of honoring my ancestors and honoring those traditions, learning about them as much as it makes sense for me to learn, while also acknowledging that like I'm going to be an ancestor one day, and like there is, you know, whoever chooses to venerate me in whatever capacity, like they can put the Picatrix on my altar, they can put the Key of Solomon on my altar, and it'll be relevant to the work that they want to do with me, and when it comes to connecting with me and sort of venerating me as I so deserve to be, I believe. So there's that element. I hope that answers the question. They're kind of separate. They're very separate, but they do kind of intertwine every once in a while.
Your mic's off,
Mute
Marshall.
it.
Super cute. I really like that you brought up the fact that you're inspired by your ancestors and hoodoo, but it's not necessarily trying to reconstruct the past. And one of the things that is so beautiful about hoodoo and folk magic, the folk practices, because it's not always magic, it really is informed by a lived and experienced culture. And I think one of the things that really, people forget about folk magic is it's always living, it's continuously moving, it's evolving with the way in which the people who are working with it are living at the time. So, the way in which I like that you explained, I'm honoring my ancestors, but like I am making my own craft with what I am experiencing here and now and feeling. And I think there are a lot of times that so many of us get caught up in, oh, I'm practicing the old ways. My ways go back so many, they're ancient. They go back hundreds and hundreds of years. And I'm like, if you're doing the exact same thing that was done hundreds and hundreds of years ago, I'm so glad it's working for you because there are a lot of updates you could probably pick up here. And I love it, even though Picatrix is so ancient, the way in which it can be applied in modernity is so evolutionary, the way in which you could use specific stations of planets to draw these pictures, because They're very vague instructions that are based off of timing and planetary work, and how you can incorporate that into your own folk practice, into your own lives, in ways that enhance our experience in day-to-day life. Folk magic and folk practices aren't just this special thing that are set aside for this time. They're literally built into, like you said, how we wash the floor, how we pray before dinner, how we consider cleaning up afterwards, how we prepare our food, the songs that we sing. Like it really permeates throughout so many aspects of life. So I want people to know, when we think about folk magic, it is not something that existed long ago that we're just trying to pick up and recreate. It's a living thing. And I like that we have you as a wonderful example that shows the way in which we kind of change and grow and evolve with that experience.
Extant practice and living tradition are things that should be adapted and adaptable, right? Not just something that like it's like there's a framework and there's a mindset, I think, within all traditions and even traditions we make up, or there's still variations on things that we do. But I think there's still like a framework of being. And I like that you had talked about this idea of like looking at things through a planetary lens, which I think is a very gent like a really broad way to explain something to somebody. For the most part, people are going to get that. Even if you can't explain fully what you're doing, you might be able to, put it in some sort of framework, and also is like a pathway of getting to a place, right? Of getting to the operation that you need to do, can be really helpful. I know for some of the geomancy stuff that I'm working on, the planetary stuff is like a really easy way to look through that lens, or easy even viewing the world through some sort of like planetary ideology. And that isn't saying that like they have to fit neatly into tiny categories, as I'm sure you're anybody who does a lot of planetary magic, like these things will overlap. They're not just one thing, and they can be multiple things. But it's like, how do we view that as a pathway of being into some other place, or to get from point A to point B, like you said, with your ancestor veneration, like they're a Taurus. And so viewing that, it's not necessarily like I'm doing a Taurus operation. I'm not doing a Venusian operation. It's not really that, but like I can access through that point of like, okay, I know you're a Taurus. Like maybe I can put some very Venus plants on your altar, or even doing like offerings of perfumes, or like foods that that are typically ascribed to Venus, like cake and things like that. Pathways of being.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Speaking of planetary magic and practice, so in an animist planetary practice, how do you interact with planetary spirits? Through some mo early modern grimoires, astrological elections informed. I'm going to reread that because I feel
Sorry,
like
that's my
that's.
bad. You can tell who wrote the brief today.
You know what? You've already brought up the Picatrix, so I'm going to ask the first question, just kind of let you roll with it. Does that sound okay with you, Austin? I feel like it puts it all together. In an animist planetary practice, how do you interact with planetary spirits?
Yeah, so it's through the materials, through there. So I'm not an astrologer. My planetary magic practice, and this confuses some people, not confuses, but it raises questions whenever I bring it up. Because they're like, oh, I'm a planetary magic practitioner. And they're like this, oh, did you know this planet is doing this? And I'm like this, who's doing what? I don't know what's going on. And so it there's I don't really work with the sort of planets as they exist up and out there. Like I said, it's these currents. I feel like we're all, as we navigate the world, whether it be through the lens of like planetary days and hours, certain locations, certain activities, like you said, certain foods, etc. We're all kind of always sort of slipping in and out of these different planetary spaces. like something as simple, this might sound a little silly, but like something as simple as like eating a steak, right? That's a martial activity, right? You're taking your teeth and biting into the flesh of something and you're ingesting that and then macerating it. Something as simple as taking a bubble bath, right? That's very like Venusian, you know, something like that. It doesn't have to always be ritual per se, just living your life. And so it's through the materials and through the activities, et cetera, et cetera. The Pigatrix is actually the sort of foundation of this like sensory approach to magic that I, planetary magic that I really appreciate. Of course, like the Key of Solomon, another very popular planetary magic text, talks about incense and, you know, stuff like that. But the Pigatrix was the first time I had ever read something where it was like, here's what this planet tastes like, right? Mm-hmm. Here are the foods associated with it. Here's what it smells like. And, you know, I am of the sort of school of thought where it's like certain planets, I'm okay going back to the vial, right? Element of my work. I'm okay. And in fact, I invite bad, quote unquote, bad smells and tastes and stuff into my work as a way to sort of embody certain things. Recently doing like a mixed martial mercurial scorpion working, and like it, I had to sort of take the remnants and cover them up with a bowl because like I was in the sort of where I was burning the incense, because I was like burning a powder that had been soaked in my own urine, right? And so it's like, that smells horrible, right? But like it worked in sort of getting me into that very embodied space for the sake of that specific working. So I would say like I, as an animist, it's actually quite natural, right? My planetary magic practice, it doesn't feel like something I'm contending with or something I'm having to reconcile, because it is already very, it's about bringing the planets and their influences and the understandings that come with them down into the physical, as opposed to trying to map the physical onto the skies, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely. I recently posted something about like, it was after Threads opened, and you know, a lot of people I started following, and same people I followed from Twitter, and so many of them, you know, I started realizing, oh yeah, some of these are the people I unfollowed a while ago, because all they do is post where the planets are right now. The moon is entering Taurus, and I actually can't keep come up with anything, but literally it's a lot of things like going on about how the planets are moving and affecting things, like degree by degree, and yeah. That was sometimes literally by the hour of every day. And I was like, I love that this is for you, but it's not for me, because I do work planetary magic on a regular basis, but my planetary magic feels a lot more animistic as well. It feels more like I'm working with the spirit of this planet, the spirit of the virtues they carry, the spirit of that day in which they have their highest peak of power on. So like in my book, I wrote a little parable about the days of the week being embodied by like spirits, are representatives, and each days of those week they're the sentinel, the leader, the priest or priestess of their temple, and they're, you know, the Wednesday is the leader of the temple of Mercury, and you know, these are the that leader works with, and I could kind of see, and that I love that you brought the word embody involved, that embodied spirit. And I can experience the type of attributions that go with each. And while I don't necessarily always get down to the planetary hour, I really fall within the idea of the day. If it's a Friday, if I have a very specific type of spell that I need to do or working that involves, I don't know, I'm not going to do a whole lot of love magic, but maybe I want to do something for glamour. Or I want to do something to increase a sense of friendship and to attract people who like me, so to speak. If I were to do something like that, I would choose a Friday. I would work with a Venusian current. I like the idea of bringing cake in this. That sounds wonderful, Austin. But I really tap into that idea of these animistic spirits of planetary nature. And even in the press, I've seen people talk about working with the pentacles of the Keys of Solomon, the planetary pentacles. And I think so many people get lost in this idea that they're working with a symbol that they forget That symbol represents a very specific spirit with intent, with very specific intentions and virtues behind it that you're conjuring up, that you're literally invoking the names of God sometimes to conjure this up. And I like the idea of more practitioners making sure that they are reminded, just in general, that when you're working with these symbols, when you're working with these seals, when you're working with these planets, you're not just doing some sort of mathematical code work. You're doing animistic spirit work.
Yeah, for sure. And like one of the ways, I don't use the word current just as a, I don't throw that around. I don't sort of use it loosely. Like I use that image specifically because a big part of like my planetary work is the visual of me quite literally stepping into a body, an ecosystem. So like when I'm doing work within the Marshall Currents, you know, part of that invocation process, whether it's verbalized or visualized, I'm stepping into a sea of blood, right? And inside of that sea, there is the scorpion. There are all of the deities associated with that planet, right? I don't work with deities, but I acknowledge their existence within those respective currents. So you have the animals of Mars, the deities of Mars, the plants of Mars, the foods, etc., and they all exist. All of those subcurrents, those little pocket pools, exist in this larger body. So it's like I'm not even engaging with just one spirit per se when I'm doing a planetary working. Like if people read my like writing and listen to me sort of wax poetic, I will occasionally refer to the planetary mysteries, right? I'll you know, the Marshall mystery, the Venusian mystery, the solar mysteries. And that's kind of just a very fanciful way of describing that larger body. But that's just the surface, right? Like once I'm in there, it's like there are other things in this larger body that you can sort of build individual relationships with, that are those relationships exist within the context of that larger planetary work, right? Like my scorpion work is Marshall, but it isn't, I am not working with Mars when I'm working with the scorpion. The scorpion is its own thing. It has its own home, its own dwelling within that aforementioned ocean of blood.
Yeah, these ideas, again, this pathway of being, or even like these haunted doorways to like get into a place and then checking out the rooms of the haunted house and like seeing what you encounter there and the creatures and the spirits and the people. Can't forget the people, that there are always people there too. Ghosts usually. Excuse me, fighting for my life with this heartburn over here. The idea to like, not to bring up geomancy again, because I know like I bring it up all the time, but it does remind me of geomancy and the way that Dr. Al Cummins talks about geomancy is like, we're not doing geomancy as a cousin to astrology, an astrological system. Like it is a planetary based system, at least the Renaissance geomancy that Dr. Alexander Cummins teaches, is this idea that like we're not waiting around for the sky to tell us that it's the right time to do something. Instead, we are going into the earth and going, finding the things that are in the earth and of the earth that relate to these things. And so geomancy has this other ability to tap into something, a planetary current somewhere else, through a different lens that allows us to be a part of this thing without necessarily being constrained to time, despite how many astrologers might absolutely hate me for saying that. But yeah, no, certainly this idea of the haunted doorway into the bloody ocean, which I think is very interesting that you talk about a bloody ocean, or an ocean of blood. It makes me think very much of a geomantic figure. So yeah, love that. So I'm wondering, you have a workshop that I've so wonderfully gotten to be privy to and take a look at. So thanks for sending that to me.
Absolutely.
You have it called Surfing the Celestial. And can you tell us about that? And what is the goal of that? And when is it? And when can people look at it? And this, that, and the third. And where can they find it?
Yeah. So as of now, the last time I taught it in person through a local shop, and then I taught it online. I think it was like July 8th, I believe. But as of now, it exists as a recording, a 3-hour recording, so much value, on my website. So snap that up. But yeah, it's a workshop where we talk about this sort of sensory approach to planetary magic. We work out of both the Pick of Tricks and the Key of Solomon, the Greater Key of Solomon. For different reasons, the Pick of Tricks for the more sensory elements, and then the Key of Solomon, because I think it does a better job at sort of mapping out the planetary days and hours and what they're for and what they can be used for. We get into this thing that I'm really excited about, called like celestial, that I like to call celestial mixology, where you take you're essentially just like blending planetary influences, right? And so you read these texts, and usually it's like, your shit won't work if you're not doing it on the day and the hour of the whatever. And I'm like, well, I disagree, because like, let's experiment with like doing something on a Tuesday during an hour of Venus. Like, what does that look like, right? What does it look like to mix solar and Jupiterian influences, lunar and Saturnian, et cetera, et cetera. And so talking about that as well, and it's listening to music. I make like planetary playlists, and so it's we spend time listening to music and sort of analyzing why that piece of music, at least according to my sort of interpretation of it, why that piece of music is Martial, is Saturnian, is Venusian, et cetera. We talk about taste and all the senses. And so yeah, it's a textually informed, embodied workshop on planetary magic, and so. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is that encompasses all of it.
I love that.
Thank you.
There's something you mentioned that really stood out to me, this idea of doing on a Tuesday, which would normally be, the day of Mars, but then doing something in the hour of Venus. And I feel like that is so under discussed and utilized in a lot of planetary magic when people think, oh, it goes this day and this hour, it's this day and this hour. And I'm like, hold on, think about the actual very specific thing that you're wanting to get out of it. Maybe you want to win a competition, but you don't want to obliterate the other team. So maybe you do something that is kind of softer, like, yes, on the day of Tuesday, I'm going to do this spell, but I'm going to do it during the hour of maybe like a Venus for friendship, or if you wanted to make it more commerce-wise, you could do that for good communication skills. So like you're fighting with someone, but you want to address the fact that you're fighting because of your bad communication. So maybe you work this spell on Tuesday, but you do it on the hour of Mercury. Maybe it's within business. You're fighting with your boss, you're fighting with your coworker, and you need to do a spell on Tuesday, but under the hour of Jupiter. Like the way in which we can go about really tapping into these very specific, minute, well, hour-long minute time periods. And I like that you brought that up, because I feel like that is something that more practitioners could explore. And I love that it's going to be part of your class.
Yeah,
It is part of your
absolutely.
class.
Yeah, like we talk about one of the things I say early on in the course is these currents don't exist as rigid prisons, right? Like spirits can move in between spaces. I work with certain plants at different points in their life cycle, right? So I work with teasel, but I only work with teasel after it's died, right? When it's taken on that brown, coarse, more thorny sort of aspect. I would argue that, I mean, one of the folk names for teasel when it's living is like Venus's Basin or something like that. And so it makes sense why like this beautiful green plant with this like these purple flowers on top would be associated with Venus. But like when it's died off and it's dried out, it is distinctly martial. It looks like a scorpion, the way the sort of briars sort of wrap around the bulb at the top, the thorny bulb at the top. I love teasel so much. And we talk about like mullein as an example of how like when it's living, it is very Jupiterian, maybe solar. It's lush, it's tall, it's vibrant. But when it's dead and all those leaves fall off, right, and it's just like this necrotic finger sticking out of the ground, that is like distinctly Saturnian. It's like, okay, well, how can we, you know, it's very zero waste, right? Like, just because it's dead doesn't mean it can't be harvested and sort of worked with. Like, what's stopping you from going out in the dead of winter and harvesting that, you know, dried, brittle mullein stalk that has spider webs in it, and sort of grinding that up into like a necromancy powder or whatever, and infusing it into an oil. And then also like some spirits, you know, just sticking with plants, for example, like I would argue exist within both multiple currents, right? Like, speaking of that intersection of like Mars and Venus, staghorn sumac is a distinctly like martial Venusian sort of love child, right? You have the sort of engorged phallic imagery of the plants, the sort of red berry clusters. But it's very sweet tasting, and it's also soft to the touch, right? It's not thorny or anything like that. So you have these two influences being brought together. And that's, like I said, that's a plant that can exist in multiple currents simultaneously. And therefore you could potentially take advantage of those sort of like mixed planetary day and hour relationships to sort of do work with that respective plant.
Now, switching gears here for a second, I have been following you on Instagram and Threads. And one of the things that I've noticed lately is you've been posting a lot of writing, a lot of really beautiful poetry. And I even saw you mention something about, like, I will be emptying out my notes and keeping it only at this specific amount. Can you tell me a little bit about your writing? This seems like it's quite a passion for you.
Yeah, thank you, first of all. I've been writing poetry, primarily poetry. I've dabbled in short stories and stuff like that, but that's just not my, that's not my bag. But I've been writing poetry for a while. Like I say, like the previous Instagram account was, it was a pen name through which I initially was publishing poetry. I eventually started exhibiting art under that name as well, but like that was the primary focus of it. And it was like mystical poetry. I was in college, discovered the work of William Blake, among others, and I felt very inspired to start to put my own sort of cosmologies and spiritual experiences on paper in verse form. I look back at some of that work, as any self-respecting artist does, and I'm like, what the fuck was I talking about? But it's, there's something there. Like, you know, I mentioned my notes app was just full of stuff, right? And because you know, I was primarily focusing on Instagram, which is a visual platform, and I wasn't actively publishing poetry, I didn't have anywhere to put it until Threads happened. And I was like, I can now sort of bombard the world with my like 2-year-old poems, it's, you know, and sort of moving on up through that. But yeah, it's always been a passion of mine. It's always been about the occult, been about my sort of magical practice and spiritual experiences. Yeah, and I'm just sort of in the process now of like getting back into writing poetry more, and also these sort of like pseudo poetic essays, which I've been very I've had a lot of fun experimenting with.
I love reading other people's poetry, and I love that you brought up that it was really kind of exploring how to verbalize aspects of your cosmology. And I think as practitioners of the occult, and whichever part we end up kind of falling in, I think there are a lot of people who get very kind of lost in the minutiae and the details of, well, the book says this, or like, this book says this, what should I do? And I think a lot of us would really, really benefit if we took a step back and started with the concept of what is our cosmology.
Yeah.
What do you believe is the spirit force you're working with? What is the thing that makes up the magical neural network of this universe that you're tapping into? And I think sometimes we get so lost in that this is the recipe, this is the spell / cake that I am making, and that I'm doing it. And we're not thinking about the cosmology behind the ingredients, the cosmology behind the spirits we're tapping into, the cosmology behind the inspiration, the passion that got us here in the first place. So I also like to write poetry, and so I really, really resonate with that concept of putting verse to the way that I see and experience the spiritual universe.
Yeah, and it's like sorcery aside, like I actually consider myself a mystic first. And so like mysticism, the way I define it or the way I approach it is it centers communion above all else, right? And so the act of making something, whether it's a painting or a poem or an essay or some object, right? Getting into that trance state, and sort of losing yourself in that process is sort of like, for lack of a better term, the sort of purest form of sort of energetic exchange between you and that spirit, right? Like you two are sort of merging into one thing in that moment, while that you know, just to say poem, to keep it simple, that poem is being written. You and the spirit, you and the muse, right, are sort of one in that moment. And then once it's time, once the poem is done, then they go on about their business, and you're looking at like, where did this come from? But I really like it, and it's I'm going to share it with the world. So yeah.
Well, thank God someone's using threads, 'cause I made it. I'm on there. I should probably use it more.
Join
It's
us, post something.
I'm
Yes.
just, I, it's just it's
You
it's not even porn Twitter. There's no fun on there.
you can shit talk with the best of them. What are you talking about?
Thank you for acknowledging that.
You know
So David, you're also doing something really gorgeous, not with just me. I mean, you're doing it with me, but you're also doing it with like a multitude of other people. You're part of the Salem Witchcraft and Folklore Festival, and you're doing something really, really delicious about the malefic aspects of the solar current, which I adore because there's so much good stuff around, even like just looking at it through like an astrological I context, like the idea of like a planet going into combustion or in Kazemi, is really gorgeous. Combustion being one of those things that you don't want to happen when you're doing planetary magic. So, could you tell us more about it? And yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, so the
Sorry, I was going to say, I think it will be out already by the time that this will come out. And
Okay.
so will mine. But you can always catch the playback at SalemWitchFest.com, both of ours.
Absolutely. The name of the lecture is the Gold and Scarlet God. For context, I wanted to go into academia initially. And I obviously did not, but one of the sort of habits I held on to was coming up with really fanciful titles for things. I love a title with a colon, and then there's like, oh,
I need a three. I need a whole
I
paragraph
love
just for, yeah. No,
it.
your title for that was stunning and also
Thank you.
very on brand for, you know, it makes me think of rubies and gold, which is, I mean, what is more solar than that?
I
Right.
just wrote it down. That sounds delicious. I love the Golden Scarlet God. Go on, tell me more.
So the Golden Scarlet God, colon, exploring the benefic and malefic aspects of the solar current. And it's going back to the Picatrix. That was the first time reading the Picatrix was the first time that I had ever it was the first time I'd ever come across something that described the sun as anything other than joy, love, light, blah, 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 right? Like you even look at the sun in the tarot, right? It's or even like in Lenormand, like it's always this like auspicious sign. It's a sign of joy. It's a new day. It's there to sort of break through the darkness of the previous moments and sort of shed light on things. And the Picatrix acknowledges that. I acknowledge that in my practice. A lot of my solar work is very, light and airy and very much that. But they also talk about how the sun is a destroyer. And I when I read that, I'm like, you're absolutely right, author of this old text, the sun is a destroyer because it is, you know, vitamin D and, you know, life, you know, thawing of snow and ice and, you know, life bubbling to the surface, but it's also melanoma and forest fires and heat stroke. And, you know, of course, I don't want to glamorize like climate change and disease, but like it's a, these are realities that we're contending with. And so, yeah, like we talk about in the lecture, I'm talking about it as if like it's done. So in the lecture, I talk about how we go over these sort of like practical elements and we look to like folklore and mythology, even like media. We talk about how like benefic solar imagery and language has also been used in like colonialist dogma. As well, this idea of sort of like the sun is this harbinger of civilization, of order, right? We tell you, we relate that to ancient Egypt and how they thought they were the center of the universe and like, we're perfect, right? And we are the sun and blah, blah, blah. And then we do the same thing with the sort of malefic aspect as well. And basically the lecture consists of me going through each current, and I sort of curated this list of references of sort of cultural, mythological, folkloric references to sort of help frame each current. Because, you know, planetary magic and magic in general can be very abstract, right? Like, what do you mean sun as destroyer? What does that mean? It's like, okay, well, I'm glad you asked. Let's talk about Sekhmet, right? The Eye of Ra, who was so belligerent that Ra had to get her drunk to calm her down, otherwise she was going to destroy the whole world, right? And she is a solar deity within the ancient Egyptian pantheon. We going over to the benefic sun, we talk about Shamash, we talk about the Queen of Sheba, it's like a wealth spirit, we talk about King Solomon, and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and then, you know, we, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And it's essentially just me sort of going down each current and sort of outlining these different things, making these connections with the hope that people can walk away wanting to do their own benefic and malefic solar magic with this potentially newfound understanding. Because it was definitely new for me when I first read that. I'm like, that makes perfect sense. The sun can kill. Right. There are some moments where the sun isn't this omen of joy. It's like, I need to get inside, close all the windows, turn on the AC, because like, I'm going to die if I stay out here. Right. Yeah. That's it.
That's really amazing. I think so many people, when we think of like two sides of things, they think of like, oh, day and night, light and dark. And I'm like, you know, you can see two sides of the same thing, mm-hmm. exactly as you described. The sun is the same thing that gives us vitamin D, that, you know, creates chlorophyll in plants, that gives literally us vegetation and oxygen. But I'm in Texas, and it's the same thing that beats my shoulders. It is the thing that gave my mother melanoma. It is the thing that I have to cover sunscreen on my face to keep myself from ending up in that same fate. It's the thing that, you know, that just burns a lot of our greenery by the end of summer, mm-hmm. and we can't wait for that shift in season to kind of have less of that intensive sun, mm-hmm. So I have not considered the sun in that perspective before. I have season wise but not directly from the sun. That's really something to think about.
It is, and I chewed on it for a few years. I was like, this is really interesting. And also just the magical applications, right? Because it's one thing to just talk about like, oh, well, you know, you can see this aspect in this deity or whatever, but like, how do you tap into that magically, right? And so mm-hmm. when you think about
cursing people with melanoma, which sorry to laugh, but I mean,
you could curse people with worse.
And also like, there's just like that idea of like, So the Gold and Scarlet God title is actually one of the few ways in which my planetary magic practice and my hoodoo practice does overlap. Because I named the sun within a hoodoo context, right? Because I was thinking about biblically and historically the liberation narratives that, you know, African-American people have aligned themselves with, whether it be the stories of Moses or other prophets. And you see, I sort of interpreted these stories of like destruction, like biblically speaking, destruction, and even that bleeding out into like the Confessions of Nat Turner, right? He was a very like biblically influenced, he was a preacher. And he references in his confessions these visions that are very reminiscent of like something you would read in the book of Revelation, right? The serpent being slain and et cetera, the sun turning red and all this other stuff. And it's like, okay, so kind of full circle relating this back to like the witch as adversary, you know, in what ways does the malefic sun or can the malefic sun be tapped into to like disrupt corrupt authority figures, right? Like Nat Turner was fighting against something very serious. Moses was fighting against something very serious. And so like, you know, raining plagues down on, you know, your boss who's being oppressive, right? Or a larger system. You can, you know, it doesn't have to be so self-centered, but you know, we're magicians. We work in our own lives. No shame about that. But just like, how does that, because, you know, we have sort of benefic solar magic down packed, right? Like everyone knows like purification, wealth, you know, confidence, et cetera. But like, how could you on a conceptual level, but also in a very tangible way, really fuck somebody up with that malefic solar energy? Yeah, and that's just what I've been exploring.
It makes me think too of like the idea of like toppling figureheads, especially from Grace, is like solar magic mostly being centered around like policy. Gaining the favor of kings is like something that you will see a lot when you read about like planetary magic. Is like how do you gain office in somewhere, or even just gaining the figure of somebody who is very powerful. Or the highest power in the land, a king, right? So the idea also of like removing that or toppling that, it makes me think of the Sun King, and then, you know, Versailles until like 1980, whatever, being a decrepit shithole in the middle of a swamp in France, you know. So gorgeous things.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, it's funny. We've always talked about the idea of like understanding that blessing and bane grows in the same stock. The same ingredient that can give you something can take it away. And I feel like you can apply that and work with planetary spirits in a similar manner. The way in which you might call up the sun to bring about success in a specific situation, you might do so to take it away. The same way you might work with Venus to bring about love or relationships, you might do so to destroy someone else's relationship. Absolutely. Or your own, whatever you want to do. I don't know you. But like, like I feel like a lot of people think like everything has to be to help something or someone. And then they have to go to the other thing if they want to do something bad. And I'm like, no, it really starts with a twofold situation. Mm-hmm. Here's the peak, here's the subject, and here's how you can help, here's how you can hinder. Blessing and bane grows on the same stock.
Absolutely.
Yeah, William Lilly, who's a famous astrologer, recounts one of his teachers doing a martial working to get a deed back, like a deed of a house back for one of his clients, and, you know, which we would usually delegate to like a jovial kind of thing, contracts and things like that. Mm-hmm. But he enlisted the intelligence, I believe, or a solar spirit, or not a solar spirit, a martial spirit, and a tornado came and took the house off, the roof of the house off, and it turns out that the deed was in the attic, in a chest in the attic. So it's like, what do you do when you're conjuring up martial spirits to go do solar work, or to go do jovial work for you, right? You know, legal work. makes me think of things like that, or plenty of things to think about there.
Well, before we finish off, can you tell us where people can find you?
Yes. So there is the hub of everything, poruspalms.com. Recently revamped, beautiful new colors, new sections, gorgeous. New pages, gorgeous, perfect. Gorgeous. I stayed up 45 minutes looking for the right shade of red.
I can sympathize.
And the right fonts and the right, all that stuff. And so poruspalms.com. That is the portal through which one can find my Instagram and by extension my threads, and then my Patreon as well, which is where I share a lot of my cosmological writing. So the way I've sort of categorized it is like more sort of straightforward educational stuff is sort of made public, like immediately public. But if you want to know the sort of what fuels all of that, the sort of the abstractions that fuel everything that you see on the main TL, then that's what's on my Patreon. So if that's something that one is interested in, that's where they can find those things. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I've consolidated, I think, a lot of my online presence, thankfully. And so just those few places.
That sounds really beautiful. I'm gonna have to go check that out because it sounds like it's a really, really pretty website. I need to make a website. Like, I just be like, this
you
is
do,
my
Marshall.
Link tree. This you is my link tree.
You need to, because your link tree is huge.
It is huge, but at the same time.
But you have a lot of things on there
I'm
that just
so
aren't.
So lazy. You've been listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I'm Marshall. Witch of Southern Light. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok and Threads at Witch of Southern Light. You can find me sometimes on Twitter at Marshall WSL. And please, as I said before, check out the link tree in my bio. I have tons of free resources for everyone and anyone. And you can find lots of videos. You can find my Etsy shop, my Redbubble shop. You can find a link to my blog on Pathos Pagan, as well as, of course, the three different options and versions of my book, Cunning Words, a grimoire of tales and magic. Tambourine Boy, take it away.
I'm Austin Bainex Bramble on Instagram. I'm screaming. That was funny.
I wrote that down.
Thank you. Stop. I believe you.
Mm-hmm. My messy notes here.
I'm Austin Bainex Bramble on Instagram. You can find me and all my womanly wares at bainexbramble.com. Of course, you can also find me and my lecture, Supping Hell Broth in the Devil's Garden, Potion Craft of the Witch's Art. I'm going to cross that E out at the end there somewhere. At salemwitchfest.com. You can catch the live recording, of course. If you can't make it to my lecture, and you can also check out all my other perfumes and things like that. I have recently a large solar collection that is coming out, which is all about gaining the office of kings in your own life, whether that be big or small.
Fabulous. And I am David Davis of Porous Palms. You can find me at porouspalms.com. Through which you can find my Patreon, my Instagram, my threads, etc. I will also be at the Salem Witchcraft and Folklore Festival, the Golden Scarlet God, exploring the benefic and malefic aspects of the solar current. You will catch the live recording of that on the Salem Witch Fest website. I am doing a lot of writing currently on cartomancy, my sort of cartomancy system. And so that will be coming out in the fall, either as a course or a book of some sort. And I'm also sort of meandering my way through some writings on the sorceries of the Book of Revelation. And so that'll be happening later this year into early next year. Yes, that's everything.
Well, thank you so much for being here, David. This has been wonderful. And I feel like I really gotten to know you a lot better. So I look forward to applying a lot of these cosmologies I've gotten to know you with to the future work I see of yours.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun, a lot of giggles, which I can appreciate. And yeah.
At this time, I'd like to thank our Tier 3 supporters, Jason, Nico, Colby, Callie, Johnny, Jamisa, Jennifer, Cindy, the Witch of Patapsco Forest, John, Giles, Jennifer, Shauna, The Modern Babylon, V, Lisa, Ariella, Keith, Jens, Adity, Tracy, Timothy, Witch Rafa, The Lady Ghost, and Key Archibald. Thank you so much for your support. We truly couldn't do this without you.